Hi, I'm Renee.
And I'm Anthony. We are the voices and founders of Blue Soul Earth, where we teach and we lead workshops and retreats about heart-centered living and unity consciousness.
Welcome to Blue Soul Chats, a podcast that bridges science and spirituality. We combine esoteric wisdom and the experiences that people have had for millennia and beyond with the latest breakthroughs in science, health, cosmology, physics, and the arts.
In each episode, you'll tune into cutting-edge visionaries who are making a powerful dent in consciousness from different industries and cultures around the world.
Our interviews cross boundaries and at times break conventional thinking as we redefine what reality is, what spirituality means, and what consciousness does.
Your journey to connecting to your higher self, expanding your awareness, and deepening your consciousness starts here.
Welcome, everyone. We're sitting here with Helene Wabe. Hopefully I got that pronunciation correct. And she is the director of research for the Institute of Noetic Sciences, otherwise shortened to IONS, right? Which is more known, especially in Northern California, it's just IONS. And she's also the author of her new book, The Science of Channeling. And so we're going to be talking about both her work at IONS as well as her book today. So it's so great that you could join us today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So we were talking, you know, before the recording started a little bit about your name, which is fascinating. So can you tell us Wabe, what it means?
Yes, Wabe is an Arabic surname. It's an Arabic pronounced Wahbe, and it means gift from God, which is incredible. And my first name is the Arabic version of Helen. And, you know, so many cultures around the world have a version of Helen. So Helene is the Arabic version of Helen.
Beautiful.
And that means light.
It's also astonishing, given that, you know, your background, it does, you know, you do come from a spiritual background, but you're also so rooted in science and so rooted in technology, right, as head of research. Can you tell us a little bit about how that started?
Absolutely. I, career-wise, am clinically trained as a naturopathic physician. I've always been interested in health, the body. Actually, I'm named after my great-grandmother, who was a midwife in Palestine, midwife and a healer. And so I'm essentially carrying on her lineage of being a healer. And I went to naturopathic medical school. I started my private practice, became very interested in getting back into research because of my curious mind and wanting to know how things work. So I began studying meditation because my specialty was mind-body medicine, received a few postdoctoral research fellowships, and essentially worked on clinical trials around mindfulness meditation. I received funding from the National Institute of Health to do a study with combat veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was really a great interest of mine, was to figure out how the mind influences our health. So from this background, you wouldn't know that I had this personal history of a very esoteric spiritual side. So my mother's side of the family is very into channeling and trance channeling specifically. And I went to my first meeting at my grandparents' house when I was 10 years old, walked into the room. There's about, you know, 30 people sitting in a circle, and my uncle is trance channeling. My grandmother's also a trance channel. My mother's a trance channel, though her abilities didn't develop until later in her life. And so I grew up with, they didn't call it spiritualist at the time, but now that I know about spiritualist traditions, it was very aligned with a spiritualist tradition background. And so there was the belief that humans particular humans can act as vehicles for communication of non-physical entities that with intention and our spiritual guide team, that can be done in a consensual, safe, and positively beneficial way, that there are various levels of non-physical beings, dimensional beings who have different vibrations, and that we can use this trans-channeling tool as a communication device to connect with the invisible realms to the end of supporting us in our human life. So this was essentially the, you know, philosophy or background that I was growing up with. It was very hidden. I kept it hidden because here I am moving forward in this career where it's not necessarily accepted to get into that. And yet on a personal level, it really brought me a great deal of self-confidence, positive well-being, the ability to be beyond my kind of small problems and have a wider worldview about who I was in the world and how to be of service to support those around me in the world in general.
Oh, that's beautiful, actually.
You know, I was in an academic university doing this mindfulness work. You know, my background was very hidden, and through this really unique synchronistic chain of events, I ended up at IONS for a future meditation focus group and was just amazed that they had the courage to actually ask these research questions that no one was talking about. So I said, I want to work here. How can I work here? And ended up, you know, becoming a consultant, then an employee, and then now director of research. And I've been there for 6 years. So now I can apply this, you know, clinical research background, and with our incredible multidisciplinary team, be able to ask these research questions about channeling and build on the work that IONS has already been doing for about 50 years now. So I'm really excited to be able to chip away, if you will, about what we don't know about channeling and support people to also come out of the channeling closet and feel comfortable that they're not alone, that there's actually over 150 years worth of research on these topics, and that we can continue to explore together about how it works, who can do it, what are the different characteristics around it, and most importantly, I think, how we can apply it in our daily lives so that we can improve our personal well-being, our families, our communities, etc. We need all the help we can get.
How did your family put this to use? How was it functional for them in their daily lives as channelers? What did they do with it?
Because that was also two generations
ago. Yeah. How did they use it?
Yes, my grandfather was essentially the ringleader. He had this deep passion for understanding who we were, the nature of reality, what happens after we die. He was doing research in the Middle East. He was a surveyor, and he worked full-time as a land surveyor. And then in his spare time, he would go around when he'd hear about cases of possessions or, you know, people who had unique abilities, and he would go meet with the families and take notes. And he actually wrote a book in Arabic called Life After Death. So he married my grandmother and took her along to one of these meetings. And then all of a sudden she went into a trance channeling state, and they had no idea that she had that ability. And so, you know, of course, my grandfather is thrilled. Now his wife is this, you know, person that he can watch and study. So fast forward now, these meetings went on for, you know, probably a decade. My uncle used automatic writing to write a book that was released on a, you know, individual level. The messages offered support for the people who were in the meetings, you know, issues that were going on in their life, you know, on a very personal individual level, like you might get in any sort of mediumship or trans channeling session. And then there was also this overarching theme about supporting humanity to wake up. And, you know, writing this book was an effort to bring this information out into the world in one format that would be received by certain people. And what I mean by that is this message about awakening humanity, and, you know, it's everywhere, right? I mean, there's, I don't know how many thousands of people around the world who are trumpeting this message of we're more than our bodies. Mm-hmm. Humanity is more than what we think we are on this materialistic level.
Right.
How do we get into our hearts to be in love, etc., and wake humanity up? So this is not a new message. And, you know, what has been told through various channelers that I've connected with is the message has a specific frequency, and the channeler has a specific frequency, and the audience has a specific frequency. And so it's coming through and onto the earth in all of these different combinations so that people can hear it, you know? So my uncle's book is gonna resonate with certain people, but not other people. Your channelings are gonna resonate with certain people, but not other people. But the core message, the core theme is essentially the same.
It's the same message being told a myriad of different ways to kind of tap into different people's backgrounds, right? I mean, if you have more of a pagan background, you're not necessarily going to respond to someone who's channeling angels,
right?
As an example.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I agree. And, you know, people often say, well, what is the source? Like, is it really an angel? Is it really this? Is it really that? And from what I know, we objectively can't prove with the tools we have right now exactly what the source is. And so I invite people to not get so caught up on the proving, on the deciphering what it is, and to use their discernment to ask, well, what about the content? Is the content actually useful to me? Is it going to support me to improve my well-being? Is it helping me to make decisions that support my life? And to really use discernment, because some people will project their authority on channeled information and they'll say, oh, it was channeled, it must be true, it must be real. And I invite people to be way more discerning than that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the message that they're hearing isn't even necessarily for them. And so it's really, really important to use your discernment. And in terms of the source, you know, if we're all interconnected, if we're all one, which quantum physics and cosmology and all these different scientific disciplines are coming out with more and more evidence that that is true, then does the source even really matter? Because it's just one aspect of me. I'm giving myself this information from somewhere, who knows? Of course, I'd love to know and definitively prove what the source is, but I don't think we have the tools to do that quite yet. I think we will in the future.
Do you think in this lifetime that we will have the tools?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we're working on that in multiple different ways, developing devices. One of our scientists building a device right now that he feels will be able to detect non-physical beings when they get close to it. We have another project we're working on to be able to detect the biofield, that our energetic aspect of our being. So we're moving there, I think, more quickly. And so I hope within my lifetime. Back to the messages, though, the other piece that's been told over and over again is that it almost doesn't matter, like you said, one at a time. You know, we're shifting this one at a time. And yet what I've been told over and over again is that it's not even necessarily about who you're talking to. Like, just the fact that you're trans channeling is bringing energy, a specific vibratory energy, onto the planet. I would love to be able to measure what that vibratory energy is. We did one study with five trans channelers at Mount Shasta. It was an incredible study. And we had random number generators in the corner. And these random number generators, they actually are noise generators, but just for simplicity's sake, imagine that they're randomly spitting out zeros and ones. And so when you look at the data, you should have 50% zeros and 50% ones. That's just how it works, and nothing should really influence it from that. So we looked, we had these sitting in the corner the whole weekend, and then we analyzed the data comparing the data during channeling sessions versus not channeling sessions when we're all sitting in the same place in the living room. And so the data showed differences. During the channeling sessions, the data was more coherent, meaning it was less random. So to me, this is very exciting and definitely a way to move forward to be able to objectively see these energetic shifts that I can feel in my body. So when I'm in a room with people channeling, it feels very, very different to me than when we're just sitting there chatting.
We are speaking about sort of vibrational shifts. Some of the more advanced, you can call them students or just people who work with us, do our courses, come to our channelings, sometimes they don't even come for the information. The more advanced people say they just want to be in this field of resonance. Now, I'm much more grounded, right? I'm like his tether, his earth tether. So I don't feel it in the same way. But some people feel shifts and tingling in their body simply just by being in the field. And others don't feel anything. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've learned from this, and it's interesting that you're finding the same through your research, is that in a way it doesn't matter, right? In a way it doesn't matter because, you know, if you say that you must feel this or you should feel this, and the people who aren't feeling anything are either feeling they're not receiving it correctly or they're not, you know, advanced enough on their, you know, levels of consciousness and awareness. And, you know, personally, we don't think that's true. We just feel that everybody has their own path and their own unique way to get there. And it really doesn't matter what that is, right?
I want to ask you a question. From all of your research that you've done, and what, in your opinion, what is actually occurring to an individual when he or she is going through this process of a trance channel? What is going on with the energetic body, the auric field?
I love that question, and I do want to answer it, although I want to address what Renee shared of first, because I think this is really important. We are, you know, at IONS, we believe everyone has the capacity to channel in some way. And the broad definition I use for channeling is this process of revealing information and energy not limited by time and space that can appear receptive and expressive. It shows up in a variety of ways, from intuition and gut hunches, precognition, psychokinesis, all the way to mediumship and trance channeling. So trance channeling is one type of what I'm calling this broader term of channeling. And so we believe, we propose everyone has this capacity, but the way it shows up for them is unique. And we call that their noetic signature. So we have a whole research program now.
You bring this up in the book too.
Yes. Noetic signature. We've identified 12 characteristics to this noetic signature that people lie on, and they have, you know, different levels of each of those 12 characteristics. So imagine one of those characteristics is embodied sensations, feeling it in your body. So someone who scores high on that is going to be in that room and is going to feel tingles, is going to feel this. Someone who scores low on that may not, but they have other characteristics that are higher. So we've developed a questionnaire to help people see where they lie on these 12 characteristics, and we'll be developing curriculum for each one of them. So if people choose to, they can nurture each one of those. So let's say, you know, like personally, I have a lot of embodied sensation aspects, but there's other aspects that I don't really, I'm not very strong at. So I could take a class to perhaps nurture that. So I really wanted to address that because it's really important to me to highlight this idea that one person's not better than another person. Our noetic signature is unique, it's beautiful, it's specific to us, and that with intention and awareness, we can really nurture that. So this whole superiority thing, I want to just
set
that aside and say, everyone can do this. Let's, you know, discover how you can do this.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost as if, you've come up with a scientific curriculum that matches the spiritual clairs, right? Because the, you know, right. clairaudient is this gift, clairvoyancy, right? Is the, you know, the ability to see, clairtangency, all of these clairs. It's almost as if you've done the scientific verbiage around it and created curriculum. So I think it's really cool.
Yes. And, you know, the next step is trying to figure out why is someone clairaudient and another person is clairvoyant. And, you know, there's a lot of anecdotes about genetics and does, you know, this obviously runs in my family. So is there some genetic predisposition that makes it easier for me to transchannel than the person next to me, makes it easier for them to remote view than me? We've done one study about genetics and we're raising some funding so we can look at that some more. We're have a structural neuroimaging project with Columbia University to see if there's something about the structure of the brain that supports that. So it's a really, I think, exciting aspect of the work that we're doing, and a major thrust for our research going forward is this noetic signature and the various aspects around it. So back to your question, I can't answer that from a, well, I can give you some information from studies. So there have been a variety of studies looking at physiological correlates. So brain waves, heart waves, skin changes, and there's a little bit of conflicting results. Some studies show that there's an increased parasympathetic activation. So you're basically more in a relaxed state. Mm-hmm. The brain waves show similar findings to what you might see in a meditative state, increased mm-hmm. alpha, increased theta. Mm-hmm. There's other studies that show increased sympathetic, you know, more adrenaline, more fight or flight, more activation, if you will. And so I don't think there's one clear answer and that there's no one specific type, that depending on the person and the type of channeling that they do, that it's a little bit different. Now, from a channel perspective, the content that we've brought forth, because that focus group in Mount Shasta, that was one of our main questions, was like, how does channeling work? And I naively thought that we would just find the one way and that's how it worked. And, you know, what was shared, and this is kind of reflected in the physiology studies, is that there is not one way. Hmm. And depending on who you are and who you're channeling, that it can be different. So, you know, there was this one channeling where we asked that question and they said, well, sometimes it goes through the mind. Sometimes it just takes over the body, like the body is a puppet. Other times, you know, there's an actual embodiment into like the energetic matrix of the non-physical being, you know, merges with the channeler. There was this other concept that the non-physical being and the channeler are aspects of each other, like it's, you know, a larger part of themselves. So it's actually they're just channeling themselves. And from what I've observed through the so many different sessions that I've seen is that it really does look different. And my own personal experience of trans channeling is the same, that, you know, when I was first learning, I felt it so much more in my body and it was very overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. And I told my guides, I'm like, okay, that really doesn't work for me. You need to just come up to here, like just use my mind, my brain, but like stop here because it's too overwhelming. And, you know, and that wasn't happening anymore, where I was feeling completely dissolved.
Yeah, it's true.
I do find it fascinating what you, what you're saying is absolutely accurate. Each channeler channels in his and her own unique way. It all depends on what aspect of the energy is coming through you, how it's coming through you, and things of that nature. It definitely takes practice.
He was a puppet in the early days. He could not even get out of a chair, and just his, you know, we couldn't have the light on. I mean, I felt like we were in Edgar Casey's generation, not the modern one. We couldn't have the light on. We eventually moved to candles. We couldn't have noise. I mean, it was very limited. Anthony could barely move his head. And I remember one day the guy said, okay, because they call me Gaia. They say, Gaia, okay, now we're going to walk with Anthony.
We're going to teach him how to walk. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. It can be,
because they took over everything.
It completely. Can be terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I cried a lot, but it is terrifying. But when you have someone there, and I want to thank you so much for writing this book and doing this research, because there are so many people out there that are experiencing this and they think they're crazy. Are you crazy, really? No, you're not. I used to think I was, and I had MRIs and CAT scan done and of my brain, and I went on lots of medication, but no, you're not. You're not crazy. And again, thank you so much for bringing that attention to people of what they're going through.
That's kind of what we try to do with our community too, is to support each other and say, you know, whatever is happening in this, you can call it awakening process. There's so many different ways to get there. And no, you're not crazy.
No,
and
you're not.
It's important to have, I think, a community on both sides of the fence, where both, you know, the world of science and the world of spirituality can come together and not alienate each other.
Absolutely. I think it's important to, you know, clarify about this you're not crazy piece, because for the most part, most people who have channeling experiences do not have a mental illness. And right. I do talk about that in the book, about how to be able to discern, is it really a mental illness, or is this some normal, healthy, functioning channeling capacity that you're experiencing? And I feel we're going to be best served when spirituality and the medical professions know about each other. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes in spiritual communities, you know, someone might really have a mental illness and need support. And it's like, oh, you're just channeling, just write it out, etc. And then in the medical world, you know, they're having a spiritual awakening and they're being medicated, you know. So there are efforts to educate both sides so that people get the help that they need, whether it's a channeling spiritual mentor that says, oh, okay, you're actually having channeling experiences, let me show you how to connect with your guides and get protection and set boundaries and get support and help your body be able to receive it more easily and have this be integrated so you have a healthy functioning and it improves your quality of life rather than being a pain in the butt.
You said a really important word there, and that was integrate, right? This idea of integration, because I think a lot of people, when they first have this, they're like, oh my God, this is all real, all true, you know? And sometimes people, I think, get derailed. We have people in our community who are following, you know, channeled information that subscribes to conspiracy theories and, you know, I'm going to die if I get the vaccine, or, you know, I need to vote for this political candidate. And it's like, okay, if guides are giving you information that have either conspiracy theories or a political or an economic gain of some kind, then it's not pure, you know. It, for us, it's always goes back to love, right? Is this about love? Does it serve your highest good? You know, I think in the areas of discernment and integration and grounding, right? I feel like we need to come back to almost like basic common sense, right? You know, does this sound like it would come from source? Does this sound like it would come from guides who want my highest good if they're subscribing to whatever it is, right? On either side, this is not about having an agenda one side or another. It's really just, there shouldn't be an agenda, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, my experience as well is, you know, rarely are you given specific facts and details about the future, because the goal is for us to, you know, learn how to be present, be love, you know, tap into our own inner knowing and have our human lives unfold, right? And often when you get some piece of information about the future and the future happens and it doesn't happen, because just you knowing that shifted the probability of it unfolding. And then people say, oh, that psychic, that medium was totally wrong. It's like, not necessarily, because they were just perceiving some possible outcome.
That's so spot on. Oh my God, yeah. That is so spot on.
So many times they'll say, oh, so you want the keys to the universe. Well, which probability do you want?
I think that's a great place for us to end on, because that is one of the major messages of my book, is instead of, you know, projecting the authority outside of yourself on these external things, social media, what other people are saying, is how do we nurture our own noetic, intuitive wisdom, our inner knowing, that it's not outside of ourselves. The answers are actually within, and that each of us can tap into what is in our highest and best in each moment from that place of intuition. And so I'm really excited to be supporting people to nurture that in an easeful way with science to back it up.
Before we wrap, there are just a couple of science aspects that I would love to touch on that we didn't get to. And it's only one of them is something that, you know, Anthony and I have been riveted just, you know, ever since this whole chapter started with us, we've been diving into books on quantum physics. And so, you know, we're kind of curious, the whole observer effect, non-local aspect of consciousness, the observer effect, you know, the spooky action at a distance that Einstein is so known for saying, how did some of the research that you did, as you know, as a segue to publish this book, how did any of the observer effect and quantum physics aspect play into what you learned? That's about the probabilities we were just talking about.
Absolutely. And I think it helps us understand how these phenomenon could be possible. So when you think of that materialistic paradigm, that our consciousness is how is it artifact of our brain, it's limited to our brain, then, you know, the skeptics are right. They're like, it's impossible for you to be getting this information from across the country, across the world, to be channeling non-physical beings. It's impossible. So therefore, you must have a mental health illness, right? But when you look at what we're discovering about non-local consciousness, that our consciousness does extend beyond our physical brain, that it likely is not a byproduct of our neurons firing only, that of course our brain is an incredible tool that allows us to function in our daily life, but that it goes beyond that. And, you know, you're talking about quantum physics and entanglement, and, you know, if you can take a photon, entangle them, take one halfway across the world, and then you move one a specific way and the other one instantaneously moves the same way, then things like telepathy or distant healing or all these things don't seem so far-fetched. It gives you some potential mechanism for how this could possibly work. And I think a lot of people are fearful of this idea because our thoughts, our inner world are not clean, you know, like, oh my gosh, someone's gonna know what I'm thinking, or, you know, my thoughts actually manifest my reality. Like, there's anxiety about that actually being true, because what would that mean for the life I'm creating for myself? Because my thoughts are all over the place and full of doubt and fear, etc. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
Well, I think on a positive note though, what you had just said, you know, the people are sort of fearful of this, but, you know, let's go 360 here and come back to, if those thoughts, feelings, emotions are connected to probabilities and outcomes, what does that mean for healing and self-healing?
That's right. And, you know, we've done a number of studies with energy medicine, and, you know, Dean Radin, who, you know, our chief scientist, has done reviews about all the distant healing sessions. The effects are small. So compared to, they're probably simpler to psychology interventions or meditation interventions, but the effects are there. And when you look at the materialistic paradigm, there shouldn't be any effect at all. Mm-hmm. So it's quite fascinating to see these positive results in plants, in cells, in, you know, animals. So it's not just a placebo effect, which is, you know, someone having positive thinking about the effect so they get better. It's like we're seeing it in many different non-human recipients as well. So there's many messages coming through, you're right, about the positive side of that, that my intention matters, mm-hmm. the way I think matters, how I view the world matters, and actually can shift things in my life. And I've personally experienced this over and over and over again. So on a personal level, I'm sold on that, that our intention makes a difference in the physical world.
So is that really, playing into the age old of as above, so below?
Perhaps.
As below.
What the above is, whatever the above and the below is. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, as this research moves forward, we'll have more and more tools to be able to objectively observe these changes. Now, you know, people who are sensitive are like, yeah, I feel it. Yeah, it's this. Yeah, it's that. But many people want to see that objective proof, if you will. And I really don't like using that prove or proof word, but having the objective data that demonstrates what we can feel as sensitives, I think will really help move the field forward in a major way.
Yeah. Do you have any final questions or thoughts?
No, I just wanted to thank you for, again, just bringing this out into the open for everybody. And you are really a pioneer in this field. Yeah, it just feels so good to have some type of science, and people are out there such as yourself doing the science and connecting spirituality. It's just amazing. It's an incredible book. And I hope everybody reads it. It's just
Thank
incredible.
You. Thank you so much for your positive feedback. And as you well know from reading the book, I mean, I talk about this a lot because it's a big deal, you know, the taboo. And I'm so grateful for IONS because now, I mean, we still get skeptical stuff all the time. And yet who I feel my audience is the people in the middle, you know, the people who are open, they're curious, and the people who have already had experiences, they don't need the evidence because they're like, I know this is real. I've had a direct experience of it. And so I try to put my time and energy into that middle group of people. And, you know, for the most part, I feel very supported in the work that I'm doing. And there are so many people coming out of the woodwork who are like starving for this information. And you look at our surveys on how common this is. I mean, this, not trans channeling per se, but just the broader definition of channeling that I use, you know, 8, 9 out of 10 people mm-hmm. have had some sort of general channeling experience. It's not rare, like people have said, and it's just suppressed and hidden, and people are fearful of coming out about it. So
that's amazing that the numbers are actually that high.
They are, yes, they are. And I really wanted people to have this book to be able to say, look, this stuff is real.
Are there any final thoughts that you can say to people, maybe, you know, just your wisdom, your insights, your advice to people who are on the edge and are afraid to come out? I don't necessarily mean channelers, but I mean people in science, people who are who could really move the bar forward in a significant way, to have not just channeling, but telepathy, remote viewing, all of the things that you talk about in your book. It's not just channeling that you're going to find in this book, everyone. It's like, you know, there's a lot of other, you could call them paranormal or just unexplained activities that we don't yet understand. What could you say to people who are on the fence, have data, want to go forward? What can we do together as a global community?
I would remind them that they truly, truly are not alone, that there are more and more people in academia who are stepping out and being willing to do research on this work, and to reach out to IONS and the other organizations that do that, so you feel a sense of community in knowing that you truly aren't alone, and together through collaboration and synergy, we can make it so that these taboos just dissolve and there will no longer be fear about researching and talking about these topics. So thank you so much for your courage in advance, for bringing this work out into the world. And the best way to do that is to start with yourself, to go within, to spend even 5 minutes a day being still, being quiet, and listening to your inner wisdom about what your next highest and best steps are for you in your life.
I love that, right?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
In that inner still point, that's when, and the surrender, right? That's when the real magic happens.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. Thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just love the experience and the conversation today. And, you know, we're going to be posting on the next slide after, you know, we wrap here, information about how to get in touch with IONS, their work, Helena's work, about the book, and any other link that you need to know to explore more into what she's doing, what IONS is doing, and of course, her book, The Science of Channeling. So thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Blue Soul Chats, a podcast that bridges science and spirituality. You can learn more about our work at bluesoulearth.com, studywithspirit.com, and bluesoulmedia.com.
Also, head over to bluesoulsummit.com, where you can watch video interviews, each season tackling a particular topic. We are also at Blue Soul Earth on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Clubhouse.
Join us for a future episode of Blue Soul Chats, where we hope to ignite your soul's journey, expand your awareness, and deepen your consciousness.
Thanks for being here, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and listen to previous episodes in our library.